Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
This is part two of our conversation with Harry van der Zeer, talking about global health through homeopathy. It takes me on to another thing which I've seen, and I'm sure we counted these 100%, I'm sure. So we know when there are, this is non-homeopathic, but generally there's, let's say, God forbid, there's some sort of an emergency. And then you've got the people who are panicking and shouting and tempers are raised. And then you've got the calm ones. And you always think at that time that, oh, the calm ones are just no good. They're useless because there's not enough noise, you know. But it's the calm ones that always succeed because they bring everything down and say, well, let's process this properly. Let's break it down and let's not panic and let's get over. Let's fix it together, you know? Interesting, isn't it? Mm. Isn't it, Nyla? When you look at homeopathy as well, or the example I'm giving is like, I don't know, sometimes road rage is, for some reason that came into my mind, okay? Or God forbid a road traffic accident or something. First thing is panic and then anger, isn't it? Yeah, but when you're calm, you can just process it so much better.
It's mostly the fear of what if that leads us to express or do different things in certain way.
Yeah.
Or sometimes there is just not fear in places where anxiety is concerned. It's just like how we perceive things or how we have carried things up to now. That is defining our here and now. And that is what we then bring back to balance. If someone is coming to us, we are just helping them to love whatever is there, whatever they are expressing, and then giving the simulimum and seeing the transformation happen. Because I loved when I was reading the book, there was something that caught my attention. The dynamis life force, because Hahnemann describes it as it's dynamic. It's moving. It's a process.
Mm-hmm.
It is not, okay, this is you, this remedy or this state, and you are going to be this forever. Like that is, I sometimes always question this constitutional remedy. How I just cannot take it as one remedy can be there for me for forever, whenever I need it, because I am dynamic. My environment is dynamic. It's always a process. And I'm changing. Everything is changing. Even the remedies are changing. The evolution is there. The plants are changing, whatever. And they fit according to what is needed and when is needed. But I am still learning. I will be an avid learner. But what do you think when you think of life force is a dynamis?
Mm-hmm.
What was Hahnemann thinking when he was talking about it?
Yeah, first of all, we tend to say like he's a sulfur and she's a pulsatilla or whatever. That is exactly what we are not.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we need to drop. It's what we are processing at the time, and we process it. We've experienced the negative side of it, and are discovering the positive side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always duality in any kind of expression of a symptom. So each remedy is a teacher by itself, or so it's what you're not. Regarding a remedy for a lifetime, I think you're right. I think we're never the same. Basically, can you still know what you who you were yesterday and what you felt and all of that? What I did find though is that once I started including conception, the pregnancy, and the birth experience, especially the birth experience in case taking, is that I would easier find that remedy that seems to be underlying. Whereas otherwise, I might start with calcium carbonicum and then later a belladonna for an acute, and then perhaps come to another. And then once they are older, start to see a remedy that in a child you would not easily see or recognize. But when you hear the birth history, then you can find that the remedy was already there. So one reason for patients, people needing different remedies, can be that they're moving from a different state to another state. And another reason can be that the homeopath is moving from a deeper to more and more deeper understanding of the case. So then you take off away part of it and you take another part of it, and then you come to something which actually perhaps in the beginning had already covered the full case.
Can you help me understand it from for also for our listeners when you talk about the birth experience? Can you, if possible, give us an example to understand this?
In my experience, when I started to see that there was a similarity between the birth phases and the miasms, I started to take in-depth cases, case taking from the mothers about the birth of the children that I would be treating. And sometimes even adults would know something about their birth. And luckily for most women, they forget about how it was. So, no, everything was fine. Okay, but can you tell me a bit more? And then you can get some kind of horror story, basically. But because that horror story moves to the background and they love the little child, and then they're willing to have another one. But what I noticed is many women have told me, like, once they started explaining the dynamics of the birth experience, they would see, and he's always been like this. So, for instance, you have a birth that goes so rapidly that the mother wasn't ready for it yet. She didn't have the stuff in the house that was needed, or she wasn't ready to go to the hospital yet, still had to pack her bags, or and then you have a child that is also always ahead of, it runs out of the classroom before the teacher notices, things like that. You see the dynamics in twins, the firstborn, the secondborn, the way the dynamics are in the birth, it continues in life.
I have to tell you, two things happened. I'm sorry I'm stopping you, but these were the two questions that were in my mind when I was thinking, what if a birth is very rapid, mother was not prepared, and what happens in the if it's a twin? It's amazing. I love it.
And the dynamics are amazing. I remember a child that needed opium, autistic child. First of all, the husband thought she was taking something to prevent becoming pregnant, but she stopped it without him knowing it. So she was lying towards him. Then she thought she was pregnant. She did a test. The test said no. She repeated the test. The test said no. It's only the third time that the test said yes. Opium, the remedy that the child needed, has in a rubric, everything is a lie. And it fitted all the symptoms of the child. It was constipated and all of that. And so even from conception on, there is an energy around that is just a continuum. And we look at life in a way like past, here and now, and future. But it seems to be one whole. And in that sense, the birth experience and the birth is just an expression of the one coming in. It's who they are, basically. It's basically who they are. So the birth, and in my understanding, life is always presenting us our simileum continuously, all of the time, 24/7. Life is mirroring back who you are. And so the birth experience is also already an expression of that child. It's exactly the kind of birth they need to come in with. And if you think in terms of past lives, you could consider the birth the moment where the software of past lives is being downloaded into the hardware of this new life.
Wow. So in this case, for example, a mother who is overdue for some time and needs to be induced, or in the birth process that something happens and the mother has to have a C-section. How would that be explained? Like, if the mother, if dilation is not happening and they have to induce using oxytocin, these drips, etc., it's not the mother, it's the child, how the child wants to come.
Well, I don't know about wanting, and that sounds like
Mean,
a deliberate kind of action. First of all, inducing labor is based on statistics very often. So it's supposed to come now. Is that true? As long as there is no medical indication for it, I would be careful with it. And besides, there are also more women-friendly ways of inducing labor, like stimulating the body in different ways. In an intimate way, instead of kind of being hospitalized. With C-sections, you have two different kinds, you could say. There's the kind where you have an emergency, and it's just the only way to kind of save the life of the child and the mother. What you then will see is that each time in life, that child, each life's experience, you can see like a process. So whenever they come to that part in the process that resembles that phase in the birth experience, they get stuck. They need help from outside. Someone needs to do something. Whereas where you have these cesareans where there's no medical emergency, but it's just like, let's do a cesarean. It's easier. It's almost weekend, or the woman is afraid for the pain or whatever. That means that the child is within the womb, and the womb is a place of non-duality, you could say. It's the place where the opposites are not known. It's never hot or cold. It's always what it is. There's never hungry or overeating, or all these extremes are not there. So it's a paradisical kind of state, you could call it. And that's also how Stanislav Grof, who's done amazing work on analyzing the birth experience, describes it, a paradisical state. So then there's a scalpel, so you kind of zip open, take the child out of paradise. And now you have to take care of yourself. And so there's still this expectancy that everything will come from outside. There's nothing I need to do. So it's very hard for those children to kind of become proactive, to give form to their own lives. So each birth, whatever the dynamic is, whether it's a cesarean or whatever the birth experience is, it kind of repeats itself in life.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. That really is, you know. You know, you mentioned, Harry, about miasms and the different stages of the birthing process. Can you give us a few more examples of that and how those remedies would fit in?
Well, you know, I stopped my practice now 18 years ago because the work in Africa was taking over. And so I have to really delve into old memories.
Okay.
I'll ask a question then.
Let's take, for instance, a carcinosinum case, huh? Mm-hmm. The cancer miasm, which is very in between the phase where the womb is starting to open up, mm-hmm. and where the expulsion of the baby is being possible. Mm-hmm. So the cancer miasm seems to be in between here. And so I remember a girl, when the mother started to have labor pains, she felt, oh no, this is not a good time right now. And the labor pains stopped. And the whole pregnancy, once she had the labor pains, then, but the doctor isn't there yet. So I need to hold back a bit. So instead of just letting birth happen, no, let's wait for the doctor. And so when this child came in, and later in my practice, this was a child who was always accommodating for others, always basically suppressing self and performing as good as possible for others. But underneath, there was a violence in her. And there's this homeopathic rubric, violence covered by mildness or something like that, where this one remedy is mentioned there. And so that's a dynamic that you can see. Or chamomilla, which is in the typhoid miasm, mm-hmm. which is very close to the end of labor, of the opening of the birth canal, with a lot of anger. Chamomilla, mm-hmm. we know a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. So chamomilla children, if you hear about the chamomilla birth, you have a mother that is cursing the doctor or the midwife, that is stamping her feet, shouting at her husband, get out of you, you're the cause of all of this. That whole dynamic of chamomilla, which is a remedy for anything that breaks open, like you have an ear that's about to break open. The same with the birth. There's this moment where it's about to break open and to give birth to a baby. There's this huge anger that is coming out at that time.
I've given birth to four kids, and I can't actually go through the process when you are talking because all four of them were very different. And it's amazing. I do have to go. I think I'm going to go back and write the experience for myself, how it is, and then see for them how it is. Because yes, it has been different. It was in different countries, and all of them came in a different way. The only thing that was similar was the time that they all came in around the night time, after midnight, around midnight. So it's fascinating. I just love something that enlightens us in this, because we see especially in children, where parents are asking homeopaths to help them. There's something that happened during pregnancy or during the birth process, or they were given antibiotics after they were born because doctors suspected that they might be infected, or they needed oxygen, or they needed any type of support. Or sometimes when they are a bit bigger in size and a mother experienced a lot of straining, and this have an impact. I can think about the cases that are in my practice that actually I can see what you're saying, and now I need to go back and revisit those cases and also maybe help mothers to go back and live or write or share their birth experience.
Yeah, because it's not only the facts, huh? There can be facts about birth, but how was it experienced?
All the experience of us, definitely. Oh,
That's what makes it so real, doesn't it? That's what just we go back to the same thing. It's just like let people talk. You know, there's never this rush, is it? Let them go through those emotions and let them tell you. And during this consultation process that I mean, as homeopaths, we have, no matter how short or long it may be, but generally an average consultation, let's say, takes all of that into account. And we see how patients open up. And in fact, there's so many, aren't there, Harry, who just change during the consultation because they've
Oh,
got it
yeah.
off their chest. It's amazing what talking can do.
It's a combination of the homeopath, the consultant, the patient, and the remedy. And we probably overestimate the remedy and underestimate the true meeting. Because I've always experienced that as the most beautiful gift of being a homeopath. This first consultation where someone is sharing themselves with you, and those, especially those where you come to a place where you know now we've come to what it is all about, and then there's just silence, there's just stillness there, because you both feel like this is what it is, whether I approach it from my relationship or from the headaches or from something in the past or whatever, they all come together in this one point. And those are the cases also, I think, where you find a remedy that may have a long-lasting effect, and because it really touches on something very major in someone's life.
Yeah, I know this.
That's
I
true.
know this. This happens. This happens a lot. Sometimes I'm sitting with a patient and she tells something, just something, and I get goosebumps. And that is a moment where I know this is where the connection is happening, and let's talk about it, because this is where the energy is. And that takes us to something very fascinating sometimes. And those are my patients where the remedies are working long lasting, where I see not only see the physical changes, I also see how their life is changing, how they are seeing the world differently, how they are experiencing the reality differently, how they have disconnected from the past and they have started living in the here and now. And I've also started prioritizing what is expected from them, what is life, and how they can be there for themselves by also staying there for others as well. This, I just love this, how you've expressed this. Thank you for coming and sharing this with us. And I have now another question. As you explained carcinosinum, can you help us go through the tuberculinum process?
Well, tuberculinum has a strong streak of nostalgia. That's an important aspect of tuberculinum, and it's the nostalgia that explains their restlessness, the tendency to move place, to move house, to move, change relationship, to change jobs, etc. Because tuberculinum being closer to the beginning of the birth process, and also as a disease being a very ancient, it's a very ancient condition, is close to this memory of being in the womb in this paradisical state. So tuberculinum wants to go back. So when the womb from a very safe place, from a paradisical place, changes, as it were, into a Folter chamber, which is kind of squeezing you and putting you together, and it's a total reverse of the experience. People that have rebirthed, and have gone to a rebirthing experience have mentioned it like it's like being in hell, it's like being tortured. And as soon and as long as you don't see a way out, as long as there's not an opening yet of the birth canal, it feels like you'll be there forever. So it's another kind of eternity from being in paradise in eternity. It's like it's endless torturing. This will never end. So for the tuberculinum state to move forward to that, no, rather go back. They want to go back. They want to go back, this nostalgia to how it can be. They know it can be like this, and they're looking for it. Paradise lost, where is it? How can I refind it? Whereas as those later miasms and those later states, you don't want to go back into the womb while it was still completely closed. No, you want to fight your way out. You can even see it in the way people that see suicide as a solution choose the way they commit suicide. A tuberculinum way is more like slowly becoming one again in this oceanic feeling of being in the womb. So they will choose something that goes very slightly, very slowly. Whereas when there was an experience in birth, like there was this huge struggle, and then all of the sudden you were born. Then you look for something which is all of the sudden. So if you look like syphilitic remedies, aurum, gold being a good example of that, tends to spring to jump out of the window or run against a tree, or so something with a lot of violence, very sudden. And they look for the same kind of energy, and there's this kind of memory, like it got resolved at some point, and to resolve it, it needs a lot of energy and it needs to be sudden.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Whereas for tuberculinum or the earlier remedies, it's more like going back.
It's profound, isn't it? The profound remedy pictures. And they're still evolving. We were having this conversation just a few days ago, weren't we, Nyla, about how remedies are evolving themselves. Because as new diseases come along, we find out that new remedies, the remedies that we have are so applicable. It's like nature has gifted us, God-given gift, that you can prescribe with pretty much the same remedies that you did 30, 40 years ago. Taking progress into account, but they will do the job because there's new facets and areas of that remedy which come to life in a certain condition. It's amazing, isn't it, how progressive homeopathy is 200 odd years later.
Yeah.
It's still saving lives, helping people with their well-being and their getting them back onto the path. You know, it's just incredible. When you think about homeopathy, it's almost like you could go down a rabbit hole because it's like there's so many different areas which make it absolutely remarkable. And then, you know, some we have the answers for, some we don't, and some is just blind trust, but it works, never lets you down.
Yeah, it's the medicine of the future.
Absolutely. I say it's the medicine for the 21st century, which is exactly what you're saying. It's so beautiful what you've said, actually. Yeah. It's medicine for the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I have to go back, because there is something happening. What the questions that I come up with, or the thought, whatever I'm thinking, you pick up and then you talk about it. When you were talking about tuberculinum, I was thinking, okay, how will it be in syphilitic miasm? Will it be just destruction or reincarnation? And then you started talking about syphilitic miasm and this suddenness, like everything is going great, great, great. And now there is a suddenly something happened and then it's end of life. I'm going, I'm not going to say. I want you to talk about it. See a bit more on how you see that.
Oh, I see what?
Syphilitic miasm and is it just the destruction and it's ending, or it's...
No.
Process of evolving again.
Well, it's, yeah, the syphilitic miasm, you could say that in the earlier state, if you go to the birth experience where you're still in a closed womb and the contractions have started, that's where you kind of encounter your shadow. And it's in the dark that we can find light. It's in the dark where we can recognize the light. So you start to develop certain qualities already in that stage. And then in the syphilitic state, which is connected to the propulsion faith of birth, it's no longer that the womb is kind of, and you are kind of antagonistic. It's, as you know, Tuya is the main remedy for that phase, for the psychotic miasm. And it's Tuya that has aversion to mother. Because here, mother and child are antagonistic. But once the propulsion phase is there, mother and child are working towards the same goal. It's when the midwife says, now you can start pushing. And also the child pushes. The child stretches the legs and the back comes upright. So they start to become, to stand for something. So in the syphilitic miasm, what we see is that People that we like Aurum, we place in a syphilitic miasm, are usually people with wonderful talents and capacities and skills. The challenge is to not use them in an egoic way. So that's the challenge of the syphilitic miasm, to use your skills not just for yourself, but for the good of all. And when it's used in an egoic way, or when you take on too much responsibility, like Aurum tends to do, and then you start to suffer from that phase, from that miasm.
No, this, okay, maybe I'm asking too many questions, but this, as a mother, this is so fascinating for me to understand. Here we are talking about the propulsion phase, but what is the miasm that is that initiates the birth process, and how is the experience of that process?
Yeah, the first miasm is what we call the psoric miasm.
And
what we know from research is that the child is taking the initiative. So chemically speaking, it's the child, the infant, that is giving chemical signals based on which the labor starts. And just from a biological point of view, you can't stay in much longer, because otherwise it's impossible to get born. Can you put the question again? Because I lost track a little bit of it.
Yeah. So what if the birth process is not starting? What happens there?
There can be a reluctance to be born. And we can also see it in the position in which children are being born. Some of them, just like I remember a pulsatilla case, and we know pulsatilla as clinging to mother, and it can also be just clinging to this paradisical state, not wanting to leave the womb. So then they may have to be forced. Or it takes them longer. And when it, and normally speaking, when it's more than 2 weeks overdue, as we call it, then the midwife or the doctor says we should induce labor now. So there can be a reluctance, a fear to start the process.
Oh, that's so fascinating. And if everything goes smoothly, like say they have overcome the psoric state, gone into the tubercular, then the psychotic, what comes after?
The typhoid, the malaria state, the cancer state, the leprosy.
Leprosy. It's
AIDS, possibly, as a miasm, also towards the end, the syphilitic state and the acute.
And the acute. So in case of a twin, for example, the first one is born normal. The first one is born. In previous times, say when the medical intervention was not there, and sometimes mothers even didn't know that they are going to give birth to twins. And the first one is born, and then they start experiencing the pains again, and the process starts again, and then the second one is born. How is it to be seen in this state? Like the second one has to wait until the first one is born, or why are they being the second one? How do you see that
It can be different for different twins. So it's not one recipe for all. But it can be the one can be more courageous than the other. So let me go into this dark hole first, and then when everything is okay, you can come too. Something
I can
like
think
that.
Of an example like that at the moment, actually.
But it can also be one that always wants to be first, that also takes more of the nutrition in the womb, so it's a lot bigger than the other one. You see those kind of dynamics.
And in cases, for example, where there was meant to be a twin, but the other twin didn't develop. This happens a lot
Yes.
in pregnancies where the only one child develops and
Yes.
born, but the other is absorbed by the body. Are there experiences that they, the one that is born, they have of the twin, the unborn twin?
They know.
Are
They
they?
know, but very often unconsciously. I remember a case of a woman who came to me, and she was probably already 60 or something like that, and always had felt someone with her. And it's only much later that she heard that there had been a twin that had not survived. And we have this a missing twin syndrome, they call it. It's even one of these those PC remedies. We have many PC trauma remedies, and one of them is for the missing twin syndrome. So the twin knows, the experience is there, but it's not on a conscious level. It's not verbalized, and especially small children can't verbalize it. But they know that there is much more awareness in an infant in during pregnancy and during labor than we tend to think. There's full awareness and there's full experience also of what's going on in the mother. It's even when a woman gets pregnant and it's, oh no, oh shit, what now? That is there in the child, and you'll find it, even if later on the mother is totally happy with it, loves it to pieces, but there's always this feeling like, am I wanted or not?
Well, what a fascinating insight. So much knowledge and so inspiring. It's just been an absolute pleasure. It really has been. What an honor, Naila.
We've just loved this, having this conversation. So fascinating, so amazing how you have put it across us, across the board. The work that you are doing in Africa and how you've explained to us the process, the birthing process, and how it can have a huge impact on who you are. And just go back and see your beginning, and maybe the remedy is just there that
I
we.
would say it doesn't have an impact. It's an expression of who you are.
Oh, it's an expression of who you are. Yes, it's an. And
How
that's why
beautifully said.
everyone has a different experience of how they experience the process, how they experience how their children were born. And sometimes there are patient who can actually remember the process. And they also tell, I know when I was in my mother's womb, this was happening, or I know when I was being born, I experienced that, I feel that. And especially our remedy, the stramonium, the fear that they experience, and it's sometimes the fear that they have experienced during the birthing process, and how these remedies can help them be themselves. Here and now.
Yeah, the birth process is just, in a nutshell, the whole process of awakening, of realizing our true self.
I would say that here for the listeners, that this is the profound effect of homeopathy, because it gives life experiences which may seem automatic. It gives them emotion. It makes them real. It gives feelings. Everything is not just automatic. There are emotions involved rather. There are feelings involved. There are things happen for a certain reason. And this is one of the beauties of homeopathy, that it takes everything into account. I mean, it's like in fact, going to mention Peter from the previous episode, but like Harry has mentioned here, that homeopathy is medicine for the future, and indeed it is. Harry van der Zee, it's just been an absolute honor and privilege to sit down with you, and you'll be delighted to know, I hope you are, we certainly are, that this is actually a two-part special now, because we have been talking for two episodes, and do you know what? We couldn't be happier, because it's been absolutely inspiring, it's been educational, and I hope we can do it again.
Well, it was lovely to talk to both of you, and especially also to have the opportunity to make people aware of this beautiful work that is being done, not just by myself. It's like I said, there's over 1,000 volunteers in Africa that are doing this. There's a team of us in Ethiopia now. There's a team of us in Uganda now. So it's not just me, and it is all based actually on the beautiful work that Peter Chappell did. Mm-hmm. And one of the amazing aspects we didn't even talk about yet is LEAP, an audio program that we use for schools, which is beyond the imagining the results of that are just stunning. But very happy to be here. And you asked earlier, like, how can people help or join or whatever? And it's not only in terms of donations, but people that would love to join us with their skills or who would love to kind of use the protocols that we have developed anywhere in the world, people are most welcome to contact us. At the website, there is a contact page, and there's also the email address, just info@arhf.ngo. And that will reach me, and I'd be happy to answer anyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Harry van der Zee. It's been an absolute honor.
It has been a pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for sharing with our wider audience. And I'm sure this is going to help so many people. Thank you for what you do.
Well, that would be my joy. And thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I'm blessing with your work.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.